Blog Talk Radio.
This is Marty Oakley from the PPJ Gazette Online, and this is the TS Radio Network. We are having trouble getting our guest in this evening, and so I'm hoping to hear back. What we're going to be talking about, if Charlie can make it, is the fact that how dead people vote. How does this happen? We heard about this in the recent elections, about the number of voters who were deceased casting votes. How does this happen? And it turns out that it's our favorite guardianship system that facilitates this whole thing. As we discovered recently, I always wondered why many times when people were stripped of their rights, constitutional protections, due process of law, where hearings were held determining their fate, where they were not allowed to be present. They would take everything from them except their right to vote. And I always thought that was odd. And hold on a second here, everyone. Okay, our guest is having trouble getting in. She should be here shortly. Anyway, what we were talking about, I could never figure this out. How did dead people vote? And why would they leave a guardianized person with only one right, and that was the right to vote? It's because these votes or these rights are gathered up, and they are gathered by the guardians, and they are bought by what are called political bundlers. And I think we have Charlie here right now. Charlie, we got you.
Oh, good, Marty. I'm right here. Thank you very much for having me on your show. It's a real pleasure.
Well, thank you. I was just kind of laying the groundwork for this, Charlie, about the fact that we, in these elections, have heard supposedly dead people voted. They found votes from dead people. And how did those possibly get there? Who did this? And you have explained this in particular. As I said in the opening of the show, I could never figure out when you strip someone of all of their constitutional rights and protections, you stole their identity from them, you stole all their assets from them, but for some reason you left them the right to vote. And that always struck me extremely odd. What was the reason for this? And it turns out that these votes are being cast for dead people long after they are dead. And this was discovered. This was quickly swept under the rug. Nobody said a whole lot about it because in order to speak about it, you had to expose who the players were behind the scenes that were using these bundled up votes to sway elections, to get something that they wanted. And these were votes by people who had passed away. They were votes cast actually by the guardian through these bundlers. And with that, Charlie, I want you to pick this up and explain to people what this process is and how it works.
Thank you, Marty. I'll be very glad to. First, I want to tell your radio audience, I think I want to answer the question, how did I get involved? What brought me into this? And that was the fact that my mother-in-law was actually physically kidnapped from Southern California, from Sunrise Senior Living, under orders of a guardian in direct violation of a Nevada court order that ordered she be allowed to stay at the Sunrise Senior Living in Playa Vista for the rest of her life. That was the how we got involved and it started. But when it started, the guardian who actually bragged to me about ordering the kidnapping and said he could, and I'm going to use the word pee on the law, but he used a lot worse word than that. The guardian name is Jared, J-A-R-E-D, E, Schaefer, S-H-A-F-E-R. Well, he did it, and I couldn't believe in 2009 why no one would prosecute Mr. Schaefer for taking an 89-year-old woman who was sick and driving her across state lines, which is a federal kidnapping case. Anybody would, if you drove a child across state lines, you would trigger an Amber Alert. So I want your audience to think that if you drove a senior across state lines in violation of a court order, you trigger no alert. There seems to be a big double standard there, so lock that in. Well, I confronted Mr. Schaefer about this, and he made a lot of statements about my wife and I and me being a blind punk. But one of the statements that he made, he said, I am your mother-in-law. I can vote for her. In fact, I have voted for her, and there is nothing you're going to do about it. I have voted for her. I'll repeat that again. I have voted for her. Well, at the time, I didn't pay attention. I was focusing more on the fact that he had taken her, the fact that he was robbing the estate blind, the fact that he was doing all that. I didn't focus on the voting. But then the funny thing, in 2012, we got something, a voter ballot from Nevada, looked like that she had voted. I threw it away thinking it was nothing. It happened again in 2014. I threw it away thinking it was nothing. But when it came in 2016, it looked like she voted again. I contacted some people. I also went to work for the Koch brothers to do what my wife did. And she did an ad based on the fact that what had happened and what the now senator for Nevada, Catherine Cortez Masto, had not done anything when she was attorney general. We had complained. She hadn't done anything. So the Koch brothers said, that's funny. I told him about the ballot. She said, you know, you really ought to contact somebody because, oh, it looks like this is after the Masto won and the candidate who lost, Joe Heck. They said, it's very funny. 25,000 more people in Nevada actually voted than were registered. And so you know that when these 25,000 votes came in, they had to vote for somebody. Well, actually, we know who the candidate that won, Catherine Cortez Masto. So my belief is a fraudulent senator all the way down the line. So then I contacted, I have a friend who's helping me.
I'm on the
air. The name I can't mention is that works for the Department of Justice and another one that works for the FBI. And we started investigating. And when they did find out that my mother-in-law did indeed vote 2012, 2014, 2016. You go, well, okay, what's the big deal? Except one little problem, ladies and gentlemen, she died February 25th, 2010. So there you have evidence of a dead person voting. So the government has told me that they're doing a preliminary investigation on it. But I'll tell you, and they've also told me, you know, that there's a lot more. So that's why I'm on the show tonight, is to actually say to your audience, start looking for those little strange pieces of paper. Paper that you thought were errors. Paper that you thought were mistakes. Paper that you thought didn't really mean anything, that it was obviously some piece of commercial stuff that you got in your junk mail. When maybe that was a guardian that, or somebody that was voting for your dead relative. And that's where how the guardians have been able to slip this under the radar. Now, the Koch brothers also told me that that these parties also use undocumented aliens and other types of ways of skewing the vote. And to prove that this is right, it don't matter what political party. But if you start talking about voter ID, all of a sudden a certain faction, and we'll call them the dog whistle faction, is going to start yelling, racist, 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 grumble, 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 racist, racist, racist. Well, that's going to happen. But the funny thing is, nobody's yelling, grumble, 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 racist about the new federal ID we all got to get next year. And in 2020, October 1st, nobody's ever going to be able to fly on a plane. So I want to know where our grumble, racist jokers are. So I guess it's okay not to have a voter ID, but it's okay. But you got to have an ID to fly on an airplane. So it shows you how they're trying to confuse you with the signals. Well, then the other thing on my mother-in-law's case, she gets kidnapped, she gets taken back to Nevada, and she goes from 134-pound woman to being dead in 6 months. Because what did they do when they got her back? They just made sure that she didn't drink any water. I guess they just didn't give it to her because my mother-in-law was at the point where she wouldn't ask for things. You had to give her things. They knew it. They knew it when they took her, and that's what happened. So I've always carried that with me. But you wonder why and how and what's going on. Think about this. There are a lot of elections, like especially in the odd years, like 2013, 2015 for local elections. Think of the times when very few people vote. Well, that's the time your dead people, and I call them zombie voters, come out and they start to vote. And they can vote for bridges you don't want, new taxes you don't want to pay, sales taxes get higher, all these things that you don't want all of a sudden just seem to get passed. But as voters, we shrug it off and say, well, I guess that's what they voted. But now you got to start asking yourself the question, is that real? You didn't vote for it. Maybe nobody voted for it. Who voted for it? Well, I can bet you, and I'll say this to the audience with a lot of energy, dead people voted for it. That's who voted for it.
Yep.
The people that passed away that had no idea what they were voting for. My mother-in-law would have never voted for probably the things that Schaefer voted for. She was a very conservative woman. Won't even have to mention the political party. But the dead are voting. So I'm telling you right now. So now you go to a politician. You go, well, I'm going to go to the attorney general. I'm going to go to whoever. And I'm going to complain about this very thing. And when they do go to complain, they all go, oh, we're sorry. We feel your pain. Or we don't take complaints about guardians because it's a family matter. Well, I'll give you a quote from Upton Sinclair. A person will never understand something when their salary pays them not to do it. So you got all these people elected with these votes, with these dead zombie votes. And mainly what I found out from my source at the FBI, that they think that there could be as high as 30% of many of the local judges sitting on the bench who ran, went to these bundlers, and they would do it. So let's look at how this works. We'll break it down. So we got a politician. He's struggling. She's struggling. Or maybe it's struggling. I think I call a lot of them this. Who cares? Anyway, so then they get out there, and they're trying to get elected. Well, they got to campaign. But there isn't enough votes, so they're worried that they're not going to win. They got Richard Nixon paranoia syndrome. So they think they're going to win. So then they go out and they get these bundlers. And bundlers charge campaigns for a lot of money. The bundlers, and this is what I found out from the FBI, contact law firms. I won't mention the law firms in Nevada that they contact. I got a consent decree there. But let's say they contact the law firm. The law firm gets them guardian votes. Then they contact some union contacts that get some alien votes, and I'm using illegal because people who cross this border and broke our laws are illegal. Call me racist if you want, but illegal. That's what I'm going to call them, illegal. So they cross the border. They do that, so they got those votes. Now you get a big bank of votes. You go in and you skew the election. Then you go back and, of course, these bundlers charge tremendous amounts of money. Either Republican or Democrat or Republican, it don't matter who, and that's how it does it. But then as you try to complain, and if some judge says, well, you know, I think I've got to do something about the guardian. Well, you know, all of a sudden, the party will call a judge or maybe even the bundler, and the bundler will say, remember, you got elected with some very questionable votes. And that's the case for one for sure, Catherine Cortez Masto. Catherine Cortez Masto. Who is she? Well, Schaefer told me for a fact that she was his goddaughter. Steve Miller verified for a fact that she was his goddaughter. So Schaefer's got his goddaughter in the U.S. Senate. Schaefer has always been a political machine in Nevada. He has been a bundler. He could deliver through his county guardianship and through all the other guardians. He could deliver 3,000, 4,000, 5,000 votes at any time for things that they wanted to get through and charge for it. That's why he's protected today, because several of the main judges who would be sitting there to prosecute him were elected by these bundler votes. So they won't dare go against Jared, J-A-R-E-D, E. Schaefer, S-H-A-F-E-R. Be sure and Google him. You'll see some great articles written by the one journalist who had the guts to cover him and who had the guts to tell the truth about him is Steve Miller. And I got to give Steve Miller a lot of praise because he did it right. He has been on top of this thing from the very beginning. He has covered it from stem to stern. And when you see that Schaefer took money from a guy with cerebral palsy, he took hundreds of thousands of dollars from him. And you see all the other people that he robbed. But yet, they go after the little fish. They go after the April Parks. And they go after the Helen Natko. Well, Helen Natko, and we know that that was not a real case, because even Black himself called me in the very beginning. And Black says to me, oh, you know, I got this stupid common law wife and I want to get even with her. What should I do? Well, that was in the beginning. And then all of a sudden, after he calls me and says that, turns out he's claiming he's a guardianship case. It was maybe she was a guardian, but she wasn't a professional guardian. She was a common law wife who lived with a guy for 30 years, took care of him, treated him well. And Black, just because he wants to have a little temper tantrum, holds his breath till he turns blue. And because he happens to get money from the Marcellus Shale that goes to his parents, that's why I call him Gas Bag Black, he goes and turns around and gets the poor lady prosecuted, because he himself told me he was going to throw money all over Las Vegas. He was throwing that Marcellus Shale gas money all over the place. So he calls that lady revenge. That lady doesn't deserve to be prosecuted. And I'm just terribly sorry she can't sue him, because there's a deep pocket there worth millions and millions of dollars that definitely should be sued and collected, because he's used that money only for spiteful purposes. That's what I think of Mr. Rick Black. And the other thing is you got all these other...
I want to go back to something that you touched on here earlier, and this is about this real ID. It's strange to me, especially in light of our topic this evening, that as a man, you can go in and get a real ID with your driver's license, birth certificate, Social Security card. As a woman, I go in, if I've had any name change, I have to produce original marriage licenses, certified divorce papers, any and all things. I recently tried to get my license converted, although I object to this vehemently. 32 pieces of documentation later, and still it's not enough. They knew who I was when I was paying taxes. They knew who I was, you know, when they collected Social Security. They knew who I was when I was working. They know who I am if I get a ticket, but suddenly, if I go to board a plane, if I don't have this special ID with all this background information, they have amnesia. And
that's right.
I have a real problem with that. If I go to vote, I have to show ID. Now, how is it that these people are taking the identity, and then I have sworn all along, Charlie, that this is identity theft. It is the ultimate in identity theft. How do these people walk into a voting booth or file an absentee ballot with no absolute identification and cast a vote for people that they are not? How does that happen?
That's right, because they know people that are corrupt within they're both political parties on the local level, because they know people from the register's office. They know people in those offices because Schaefer told me himself. He says, I control votes in Nevada. Yes, he told me that one day. I used to love to do something with Schaefer because Schaefer had a problem. He used to drink. And when we were fighting, he'd call me after he'd had a few drinks to yell and cuss at me for turning him into the IRS and all that. And that's what he actually said. He said, I've got control of the register. I've got control of the judges. I've got control of a lot of people. Well, I never knew what he meant by he had control of the judges. I used to think that it was bribing the judges. I found out that's wrong. He does not control the judges by bribing them. He controls them by the votes. So it's the direct contacts that they have with the voters register. Because, you know, even the register, the top positions in there are political appointees. So you have to play the game to get to be the register. So once you're there, they'll just let certain people through and certain people that don't go through. And they always, and you go into any organization, you got classes of people. You got the regular people, Marty, like you and me. And then you have a class of these so-called elites that can go in and do anything they want. And that's exactly what happens. And that's how this particular situation happens.
You know, you spoke of Steve Miller. This man for 20 years chased after Jared Schaefer, wrote copious articles, documented the dirty, low-down crap he was doing, where he was connected, how he was connected, how he was controlling everything in Las Vegas, and yet you couldn't bring this man down. And I've always attributed this to the fact that he was so well-connected and he was smart. He had the goods on the people that could have taken him out. Could have put him
out
of business. He had information on them. Yeah, go ahead.
He actually said that to me on a couple of locations. He says, I got so much dirt on anybody, and I'm going to use an exact word. I'll clean it up here for your show. He said, I got so much dirt on anybody, I'll ram that dirt where the sun don't shine for anybody that gives me crap for anything you say, blind man.
Wow.
That's what he said. You see, that's the kind of tough guy you got in that kind of thing, and that's what he used to say. So now you know what it means. It means that he's got connections with the voters. He had connect. Now, here's the thing, and this is something you want to point out. There's an accounting firm, Gamut & King. I'm going to say, now, how come Jared Schaefer, it proves he's well-connected because he uses Gamut & King as his accounting firm, but I'm also going to tell you, so does Senator Dirty Harry Reid use Gamut & King as their accounting firm.
Yeah.
Now we got Reid and Schaefer using the same accounting firm. There's your connection. See, the way these guys do it, like Schaefer isn't going to go and call up Harry Reid. No. He'll get somebody through an intermediate to call up Reid and say, this is what this person needs or that, so that there's never any connection. But that's how they do it. So they have these direct connections, one and the other, and because that's the way Schaefer did it. Then we have and then the thing that they do is that Schaefer has this attorney fix-it guy, and if you ever Google him, you'll find out it's a real case. He's been arrested in Nevada for many sex crimes. It's actually in the newspaper. You can read about a guy named Poplowski, and this guy is Schaefer's fix-it man, and Steve has written articles about him, so I don't have to say anything about it. Guy's got a bald head and he goes around fixing stuff. But when he wants to do Schaefer's dirty work, that's exactly what happens. So they never do it themselves. He just gets it done. That's how these guys get away with it.
Yeah. Well, like I say, this explained a lot for me, Charlie, because I could never figure out what the point was in all of that they took away from these seniors that they kidnap and capture in this system. Why would you leave them voting rights? And it's because those voting rights are worth money.
Billions.
Yeah.
There were billions.
And don't you wonder, overall, how many seniors they have done this to? People that are still alive living in nursing homes that somebody else is casting their vote in their name, but it isn't the vote maybe they wanted. Or the people who have passed away, how many years since they passed away have votes continued to be cast in their name? And
we could
talking.
we could be talking millions here, and I'm not exploiting this or exaggerating it. We could be talking millions because here's what's going on. I figured this out. I sat down and thought it out when this all happened. I said, where did it start? Who did it start with? Where did the crooked voting and having false votes? First time we saw it was Boss Tweed, New York City, 1865. That's where you first saw it. He was the first guy to implement it on a wide scale. And it continues. Then when there's a movie out called McGinty, 1931, where they're actually showing people getting bums from Skid Row to vote. So that was everybody
yes.
knew that this has been the way it's been in American politics. But what changed between 1931 and now? Well, in 1931, an old person was, if he died at 67, he was considered long life. But now you got people living up to 100, and they're losing their mental faculties. So now you don't need to go down to the Skid Row and get the bums. You've got the seniors who have a diminished mental capacity that you can get from nursing homes, dysfunctional families, guardianships.
Yeah.
Get them to vote. That's where you got your votes now, and nobody's ever going to be the wiser. So you become the secret silent fifth column, and I think you're talking millions of people.
Yeah, I do too. Over time, you have to think about, you know, Charlie, one of the things here a few years ago I started looking into as we looked into hospice now being the Grim Reaper, and I was cruising the Health and Human Services federal level website on Medicare, and I came across Medicare deaths, and the number reported for 2010 was 2.1 million seniors had died on Medicare, and nobody said a word that this many people had expired on Medicare. All they talked about was the number of people signing on. Well, the number of people dying exceeded the number of people signing on and has done so every year. And yet the largest voting bloc in this country is seniors. Now, how does that happen? I mean, you understand
right.
what I'm saying?
I understand
it
exactly because those dead people are still voting. And excuse my joke, it seems that the way they vote now is somebody gets out an old Ouija board and they run the little thing across the Ouija board, and that's counted as a vote. That's how you get to more seniors, called Ouija board voting. I got to call Cosmo Topper, George, and Marion Kirby. Hey, George, where are you? And don't forget your alcoholic dog, Neil. We need to get them right in the picture.
Yeah, it's a strange. Yes. You've got these people voting that are long since dead. And like I say, when this came out on the news, Charlie, when it came out on the news that, you know, it's voter fraud, you know, we had illegals voting, and, well, who facilitated that? And then we have, there were several ballots found by people who were dead, and that just absolutely disappeared off the radar. I heard that mentioned once or twice. Yeah. Go ahead.
Well, I heard it mentioned several times. It was several times mentioned on Fox News. Sean Hannity carried it. I also think that Tucker Carlson carried it. They both did, because Donald Trump made a big story about it in 2017. And then all of a sudden, it got dropped. But, like, if you notice, a lot of things Donald Trump said, he was right. He said they were spying on him in 2016. Now it turns out they were. Even the new report that's going to be coming out soon from the inspector general will show that they did with a false dossier. He said that there was voter fraud that was trying to rig the system, and Donald Trump still says today the system is rigged. So he's showing right there, whenever you look at those two things, he knows that there's voter fraud, and he knows that there's dead people voting, and he also knows he's got to do one heck of a job if he's going to win, only because he's going to be running against dead people who are not going to be voting for him.
Yep, there you go. I've maintained all along, Trump's biggest issue coming into office was the man actually thought he was going to be running things, and I think it was a shock to his system to find out he's running nothing. Everything is done elsewhere behind the scenes by people we don't even know. And I told people I hear about 3 months into his term, Death Vader, that's Dick Cheney, we call him Death Vader, showed up in D.C. for 2 days. And when he left, Donald Trump did a 360 on about everything. His wife moved out of the White House, took their child. They got the law laid down to them. And he went quiet on a lot of things, did a reverse on a lot of things. But basically, he was just threatened. And they threaten you with your family is what they do. These people have no morals of any kind. And the idea that they know this voting fraud by dead people is taking place, and yet nobody is doing anything about it. And you have to look at who basically is running that scheme, and that's the American Bar Association, these guardianship associations, and these people have a lot of money and a lot of clout, and they want people in there that they can depend on to help them keep that system running the way it is. And they're not going to allow anybody in there that's going to upset this money apple cart. This is mega, mega billions every year that are stolen from seniors as they steal their identity and all their assets, disinherit their families, and then the coup de grace is to keep them voting even after they've died.
That's right. I think the cutoff, because it looks like in 2018, I've learned that my mother-in-law did not vote in 2018. So the fact is, I think that what happened is that once they turn 100, they cut them off. So my mother-in-law died at 89. I think I got their playbook. The senior will vote up until they're 100, because after 100, somebody's going to ask questions. But my mother-in-law died at 89, so nobody's going to question a 90-year-old, a 92-year-old, 95. But once they get to 100, they do it. They cut it off. So there's a useful life to this dead voting seniors playbook. That's how it works. And
right.
I figured that out. So yeah, so we know, I've learned that through my sources on my own mother-in-law. But what I think too is that the reason how these guys do it is that the fact that you've got that when somebody's putting through these bridges that we don't want, like California's got this project, because nobody wanted this project, a $20 billion train to nowhere. And that was voted in on a year that I remember where it was one of the odd election years where not that many people voted. That's how you got such a stupid thing. Well, you know, right there came the dead people's votes, and $20 billion that could have paid pensions, got teachers, got books for students that needed education, all that went to the stupid train that now they have to dump and throw in the trash can because it was a boondoggle only to pay off people. Dead people voted for that.
Right.
And now the train is deader than the dead people.
Yeah. I just, good Lord. This is just absolutely, you know, okay, so the way this works is the political bundlers are the ones who gather the votes. And they gather them from the guardians and the attorneys, okay? And then
that's right.
What they do is they take those bundled up names and those stolen identities of dead people and they sell them, correct?
That's correct. They actually sell them. They sell them to the campaign that's got the money to pay for them. That's exactly correct.
Okay. Wow. Gee, many Christmas. And so the law firms put the bundlers in touch with the guardians. And the bundlers give the guardians voting instructions. And then the guardians compile the list and then are paid a fee by the bundlers. Well, this is just
a win-win situation,
isn't it?
It's a win-win situation.
Okay. And then you talk
to... The guardians get paid by the bundlers. Another place the guardians get paid. If they put an old person in certain rest homes, the guardian gets a kickback fee from the rest home for the bed. So the guardian gets a fee for putting the drug person in a bed, and then gets a fee for getting the drug person to vote, then gets fees from the family. The guardian's making it all the way around. Then the guardian has to kick some of that firm into the law firms to create conflicts with the family so they can bill to generate more money to go back and forth. That's how the wealth is being confiscated and used. So it's confiscated to drug them, keep them, to vote them, and it goes, and it's all controlled by these bundlers who can turn it one way or the other, and these bundlers charge a fee. So if you look at Maslow's votes, who's her main supporter? Well, of course, MoveOn.org. Well, who's one of the biggest bundlers out there? George Soros from MoveOn.org. So he's a bundler, but he's got all these other bundlers underneath him, so they're doing this fraudulent voting to get that. So that's the guy that actually helped elect her.
Wow. This is just, and you know, and they're in Las Vegas too. Yeah. I know Steve, you know, he went after especially that young man who Schaefer took all of his money. He was disabled and actually had him put out of his home and sold his home and left this kid with absolutely nothing.
That was Jason Hansen. You can actually see it on the web because he's got Steve made two. Now, I'm going to tell your audience, Steve made two very compelling videos, Jason Hansen Part 1 and Jason Hansen Part 2. And you can actually see it in Jason Hansen's own words what Jared Schaefer did to him. And then what you're going to see is you look at that and you see this poor kid crying, his money stolen, money from the family taken, all this kind of stuff. But yet nobody ever prosecuted Schaefer for what he did to Jason Hansen. In fact, when Jason Hansen tried to sue, because nobody told him, here's the funny thing about Jason Hansen's case, which shows you that dead people are voting. Now, let's look at this for a second. Jason Hansen is disabled. He is under ADA. Under ADA, follow this logic with the breadcrumbs. ADA has to make accommodations for everybody. You know that, all right?
Right.
Well, Jason Hansen had no attorney, but at age 18, he had nobody to represent him. So when he went back to try to file his case, they told him because he didn't file at 18 when he was supposed to, when he could have objected, that he couldn't sue. That's how they stopped him. But wait, the fact is the state government, because of the dead people voting, ignored the accommodations that are dictated to Jason Hansen and rightfully entitled to him under the ADA. They swept it under the carpet, and the judge pretended she didn't even know that the ADA existed, so Jason never got a chance to get back the real money that Jared E. Schaefer stole from him.
Wow. Wow. And I noticed in, you know, like that April Parks and that Patience Crystal case, both of them proteges of Schaefer. Schaefer never got touched. They got hung out to dry, but Schaefer never got touched. And both of them worked for him. And,
Patience Crystal actually worked for Jared Schaefer in his office, took money at Schaefer's office from people. And I can tell you, my mother-in-law was one of them, pawned my mother-in-law's Wedgwood dishes and all that kind of stuff and other things. And where did she do it? Out of Jared Schaefer's office. Well, according to the IRS, this is another thing where our dead people are talking, because under the IRS, it says if you use somebody's phone, use their stationery, have business cards, you in effect are their employee, even if they call you an independent contractor. So it was no question. We had Patience Bristol dead to rights as a Jared Schaefer employee. In fact, she was going around town, and there's a dozen witnesses that say she says she was an employee of Schaefer, but yet Schaefer never got touched for all the money she stole from my mother-in-law, from all the other people at Jared Schaefer's office.
Gee, Vinny Christmas. I don't know. You know, and like I say, go back to Steve, 20 years of pounding and hammering on this and the evidence he assembled and put together and published, and nobody will go near this man. And all that tells me is, as we said earlier, he was smart enough, if you can call it that, to get enough compromising information about the people who could have done something to him and held him accountable that they didn't dare open their mouths, which makes you wonder what the hell were they doing. And
Schaefer
because
kept
people
telling
like
me,
him,
he kept, yeah, he, yeah. Schaefer kept telling me, Marty, He said, I got dirt on everybody. Nobody will do anything to me, because he actually used to say this to me. He said this to me on four different occasions. He says, I got so much, the word starts with an F, dirt on everybody, that if anybody gets anything to me, I'm going to ram it up there, you know where. That's what he used to say. So he used to say to me, here, I'll give you the number of Mazda. Here, let me give you the number of the police department. He used to actually give me the phone numbers on the phone and dare me to call them.
Wow. Wow.
You see, that's and now that, and I want to bring myself to another person who never put any of this in the film because he knew it was verified, and that's our little friend Billy Minsk out there that made his film. The fact is, we were left out of it. He came down to my boat. He took this whole story. It was all told to him for 3 hours on tape. Everything I'm telling you, it never made one thing in the film. Well, I think what happened is that some of these people, what I call Goldilocks advocates, you know who I'm talking about, talking about Belchie,
yep.
Black, Minsk, and they, and I call them Goldilocks. They got little short skirts on, and they go, oh, my porridge is not too hot. Oh, my porridge is not too cold. But I won't say anything about anybody, so I won't ruffle too many feathers as long as I'm ineffective. It's almost like Donald Trump says the way the president's dealt with China. We'll criticize them, but we won't do anything really that effective. We'll show some movies. Maybe the Kasem Foundation will have a few parties. But we don't really want to ruffle any feathers, because if they do, God knows, you might upset the dead people.
Jeez. Wow. Wow. This is just unbelievable. How do we begin to fix this? Is there any way to fix it, Charlie?
Yes, there is. And that's why I'm on your show, because we're starting it right now. We're starting a discussion. And anybody that I want a lot of people that listens to your show, if you got a problem with a guardian and you complain, you start asking your local officials who don't do anything. Were you elected by votes from dead people? How many times were you elected with a bundler? How many bundlers got you to be a judge? How many bundlers got you to be the attorney general? How many bundlers got you to be a state assemblyman? How was your election taken? We got to start discussing this problem. Because the way people work, because I have a master's degree myself in counseling, they deny. It's like the Germans denying the Holocaust. They killed 6 million Jews in Germany. And if you ask the average German on the street in 1941, he or she would say it was never happening. Even up until 1948, a lot of Germans said it never happened, but it did because my father was there and he saw it. The bottom line is it happened. They saw it, but people denied it. Now, we got that, and I'll tell you where we got it elsewhere. The Catholic Church priests have been molesting boys for years. It now is out. The church is paying, but it took years to have a discussion. So what we got to do is just start by talking about it. Start by talking about fraudulent votes, dead people votes, illegal aliens voting, and saying this is not right. Because we have to say things like, if you allow this, you're going to go the route of Rome. Rome went a route just like it through cultural decay. So it got to be where the Roman parents said, we will not leave a better country to our children than we had. And now people are beginning to accept that mentality due to this corruption and bureaucratic manipulation. We have to tell everybody we're going to leave the next generation a better country. How are we going to do it? We're going to have a discussion. We're going to try to fix these problems, and we're going to call every politician out and keep asking the question. And pretty soon, the dead people voting will become mainstream. It may take a while. Like I found out that my investigation, the one that I got, might be a year to a year and a half before they come back. They told me it's like turning a battleship, getting this thing through. They're already getting a lot of pushback in FBI and other places about this thing. So it's going to take time, but it's like turning a battleship. We start by talking about it, and we say it to everybody we meet. Once we do that, and it becomes what's called in the zeitgeist, that's the word they use, and it becomes a meme that it runs into the mainstream of society, people start accepting it, people start questioning it. It took, like, hey, if you drove drunk in 1970, what did the cops do? I remember my dad had an alcohol problem. He used to just pat him on the back, send him home, and say, here, sleep it off, and we'll come have a beer with you tomorrow. That's what some of the cops did on Sunset Boulevard. try driving drunk today and see what happens. Same thing with a Catholic priest. You could do that in the 1970s, and they'd say, even if they were seeing it happen, that it didn't happen. Well, this is happening, and we got to acknowledge it, and we got to talk about it. Once we talk about it, then we can talk about solutions, and we can get it fixed. Because the problem is people are not acknowledging the problem, that there is fraud, and there is dead people voting, and it could be your parents that could be voting for things they never believed in and never wanted. And if you allow it, you're going to have a country a lot worse than you ever had for yourself for the next generations to come, because the corruptors will take over, they will run it, and they will destroy it.
Well, and, you know, and that's the thing, too. I think what I, and in talking to so many people, Charlie, and I swear there's days that I think I just cannot take one more call, but in talking to people, what I'm hearing is a level of alarm that I haven't heard in 30 years. People, yeah, that how out of kilter things have gone, how bad they have gotten, how many of our rights we have lost. And it isn't some foreign terrorist doing it to us. It's our own government. And it is these people in these lower governments in the state level that are taking advantage of absolutely every possible means to strip the wealth from the population. They're running, it's like having the mafia running everything, and nobody can stop them. This is no country to grow old in. And unfortunately, even if you grow old and die, they're still using your name. They're still using your assets. They're still bleeding you dry. I don't know what we're going to do here. This cannot go on the way it is. I have never seen such a level of discontent as I have witnessed in the last 5 years. People just so fed up with the corruption out of government in these communities. People like Jared Schaefer who've got a death grip on a community, and yet nobody seems to be able to stop them. In fact, nobody is willing to even honestly give it a try. And I don't know what that says about us.
There was some violence that was associated with Schaefer. Now, Steve Miller wrote about this, so I'm not saying anything out of line. You know, Thomas Gall, I don't know if Steve will tell you about him. Thomas Gall actually shot and killed two of Schaefer's goons. They came when he had his. What happened with Gall is that, I'll give you the story and Steve will amplify it because Steve, I know, is going to be listening. Thomas Gall went to one of Schaefer's guardian classes. Now, you got to understand this. They were going to build a national network of senior voting. The guardian classes took place in county buildings where Schaefer didn't have to pay any rent. Gall goes there to try to learn how he could be a guardian of his mother. Schaefer learns the mother's got money. He immediately takes and seizes and becomes the guardian of Thomas Gall. Then he sends Thomas Gall's mother. Then he sends two goons to Thomas Gall's house in search of papers, so they can get him and maybe do fraud on signatures, God knows. Gall catches him, and he gets in a fight. The guys strike Gall and try to beat him up or hurt him. Gall gets out a 20-gauge shotgun, and a 12-gauge shotgun, I got to get that right, and he blasts him. He gets one in the house, and he gets one on the front porch. Both the guys that were Schaefer's goons drop dead. That's the thing. That's what happened. And so Gall never got prosecuted for it because Schaefer's goons broke in his house. Period. That's what happened. Now, I don't know about Terry Williams because she said a lot of things. She once told me she got $1 million from her estate. But then she also said, and I do believe this, she claimed she was beat up by one of Schaefer's people. So the fact is Schaefer has gone to violence, but he also probably has connections with the IRS, and that's why people don't go after him. So he's capable of a lot of things, and the Thomas Gall case is a pure example of it.
Well, you know, there was a case out in Washington State. This has been at least 10 years ago. It was a case of Dorothy Griega, and Dorothy Griega died. She had several charitable trusts set up in one, I think it was Bank of America, and I could be wrong about that, but the other bank involved was Wells Fargo. You want to stay away from Wells Fargo. And what they did, while she was still alive, they started transferring all of these trust accounts, by the Guardian did this, over to Wells Fargo under these fake trust accounts with fake tax ID numbers. This got sent to the IRS and said these are, you know, fraudulent. These accounts don't exist as charities. These tax numbers, ID numbers are not valid. And the IRS would do nothing. They took $22 million and converted it over into another bank, and it just disappeared into space. And they were still tapping Dorothy Griega's accounts 7 years after she died, all to benefit the ward. As I have said many times, I don't know what it is you can do for a dead person, but apparently there is something, and it costs a lot of money. And we're seeing this state to state, Charlie. Even after the person dies, we have these, you know, open-ended guardianships that keep going for 3 years, 5 years, some cases 12 years, to make sure that every last dime is wrenched out of that estate, all to benefit the ward. And when you come into guardianship,
you can bet that that lady's money, $22 million, disappeared, and a lot of that. Now, that went probably to Washington, too, right? There was where your money went to those bundlers again. There you can see what happened. It went from the guardians to the law firms to the bundlers to the money of political campaigns. So you wonder, okay, the senators up there, we know who they are. I won't mention the names in Washington right now that were elected. Hey, we got to ask her that question. There's a lady up there, very famous. Were you elected by votes collected from bundlers that might have been swindles from this lady's money, or this lady's money went to pay for dead people to vote for you? Is that what happened? Is that who Washington is being represented by in the United States Senate? You better believe it. That's where it went. See, there's right there when you tell me that kind of story, you got it. And then look what happened with Schaefer and Pacoli. He bled Pacoli like for 7 years, took tons of money out of that estate. Where did that go? That went to some of the bundlers too. Every time you see this happening, you got to think one word, going to the bundlers to buy dead votes. And you almost got to start singing it.
Wow.
Going to the bundlers to buy dead votes. That's it.
Jeez.
And it connects the dots clean and simple. Yeah, sure. How many dead votes did that $22 million buy? 20.
Yeah. Yeah, and you know, nobody questions it. Nobody questions. You know, we had another guest on here. It's been some months back, Sharon DeLobo, and her family had, and they were quite well-to-do, and they had bought a ranch out in Wyoming and converted this thing into a place for disadvantaged children, and it was quite something. They gave horseback riding lessons, swimming lessons, reading lessons, dance lessons, stuff these kids normally would never have access to, and, of course, meals. And they would send out vans. The parents were welcome to attend with the children. And it was wonderful. When her mother was in her last days, she left $32 million to fund this ranch and keep it going for these kids. The first interstate bank out there, along with the board of the YMCA, the people her mother had named to head this board for this foundation she set up for the ranch were quickly replaced with members of the YMCA control board. And they immediately took that entire estate, everything, even the money, and left these kids. They sold it, parceled it out, and at one point she has them in a recording where she's saying, why didn't you do what my mom said? Why didn't you do it the way she asked? And the man is telling her, get over it, get over it. Just move on. You need to move on. We own it all, every painting, every tool, every vehicle. We own it all. And this open admission of we stole the whole damn thing, and you can't do anything about it. But one of the things we all need to watch for is these banks. You cannot trust these banks to manage these estates, especially if they are of any size, because the bank gets greedy. and they'll steal the estate. They'll come up with all kinds of means and ways, and this thing with First Interstate Bank out there was just an ideal thing. The thing in Washington, D.C., here again we see the banks, and we've seen Wells Fargo show up numerous times in these cases where they have people's trust accounts, and they seize the money. They can't get the money. They come up with all kinds of reasons, and the bank just absorbs it. But, you know, and the thing is, we have these people that we elect that promise all kinds of things, and I don't know about you, Charlie, but I think meeting with politicians on any level about any of these issues is an exercise in futility. It is a waste of time. You go to opensecrets.org, type their name in, hit the money trail tab, and look at all the people that are donating tens, if not hundreds of thousands of dollars to them. It's the same people you're fighting. Now, who is it you think they're going to stand up for?
I'm going to stand up for the bank. I'll tell you, if you go to opensecrets.org, look at Catherine Mazdo. That's where I found out about George Soros. And look at Catherine Mazdo's banks. If you open up in that opensecrets.org, start doing politicians and start looking at the names of the banks. The one thing that surprised me about the YMCA is a government-funded organization. It operates a lot on government funds. So that means it has to get – it has to have the support of the bundlers. The same thing. You see that? Every time you go back to it, you're going right back to the same villain. These crooked people, these bundlers, they're the ones. The bundlers, through the YMCA, stole the property and did all that kind of stuff. It goes back. Until we eliminate bundlers and get rid of that kind of thing, we're going to have this putrid stench in our system, and that's the problem. Right there, everything you say, every time you connect, if you start connecting everything and start yelling bundlers, lobbyists, and that kind of thing, you just have to keep drawing the cockroaches out of their hole and shining the light of truth upon them.
There you go. Charlie, we've only got a couple minutes here, and I want to let everybody know we're going to be doing part two on this with Charlie because we got a lot more to cover, and I'll be giving you all a heads up. We've got a full phone board here, Charlie, so there's a lot of people listening. But we're going to be doing a part two in this and make a series out of it because Charlie has a lot more information that I think you all need to hear. It's stuff we haven't heard before, and it answers a lot of questions people have been asking about the who, where, when, and why, and how did they get away with this. He's got some of the answers. And if we put enough of this together, we'll figure out how to put an end to this. So, Charlie, I want to thank you for being on this evening. I truly appreciated this hour. Went way too fast. And so everybody watch for the promo for the second part of this series. And, Charlie,
and I just want to
thank
say
you
one
for
thing,
being
Marty.
Here.
I want to thank you. I want to thank you very much for the opportunity to be able to air it. You've really been great. And I'll be looking forward to part two. Thank you so much for this opportunity.
Well, we were glad to have you. And we will be back again with more of Charlie. Thank you, everybody, for tuning in. You have a lot to think about here. Don't hesitate. The show is available in archive. I can't even talk this evening. In perpetuity. So listen to it at will. And we'll just have to go and do this again. So with
absolutely.
That, I will say goodnight. Thank you,
and
Charlie.
On my last comment to all your audience, watch out for that Ouija board. It's everywhere.
Good point, Charlie. Good point. All right. Good night, everyone.
Bye.
Okay.